information is free.
The law? Yeah.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
A popular government without popular information is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy or perhaps both. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 143rd episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 2nd, 2009. My name is James Uppenpilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, Media Monarchy, Food World Order, and CyberspaceWar.com. All your sources for all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the Polanski polemic and sinister forces, Hitler's skull and unholy alliances, the OK CCTV cover-up, 9/11 updates, in a new investigation, G20, fake terror in the American police force, Obamasiah in the Pimp Olympics, geopolitics, Iranoia in the EU, war whores, econo crash, secret deals, and so much more, all here, episode 143, MediaMonarchy.com.
Thank you.
too young indeed, my friends. That's the Junior Boys with the title track from their record, In the Morning. However, that song's much more recognizable by its refrain of too young, and that's the tongue-in-cheek way we'll set the stage for this 143rd episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 2nd, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the sites and show Media Monarchy, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War, all under the MediaMonarchy.com kingdom. And I'm coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And huge thanks to the growing list, ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast. It's 11 a.m. Mountain Time out in Casper, Wyoming, where they're blasting out on 92.3 FM as well. Brand new AM 1500. It's fantastic. Congratulations and welcome aboard if we've picked up some new AM folks. Also, thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. It's 1 p.m. on the East Coast. And thanks, of course, to Free Radio Olympia and my neighbor to the north, Olympia, Washington, frolympia.org, rebroadcasting Media Monarchy Saturday mornings at 8 Pacific Time on 98.5 FM. We've also got KBFR, Boulder, freeradio.com, 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado. And we've got 104.1 in Berkeley, California, berkeleyliberationradio.net, and of course, cascadiapublicradio.org. So huge thanks to all those guys getting the information out. Again, we've said it before, we'll say it again, many hands make light work. You can get in touch with me a ton of ways. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. All using Media Monarchy, one word, as either your keyword or your extension, Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. And I should note, we started off the show with a quote from James Madison about a popular gov without popular info is a prologue to a tragical farce. That's a paraphrase. As we usually do, we like to glance at Google News and see what's happening on this October 2nd, 2009. It's definitely fall. Fall has fallen. It went from sweltering to soggy out here in the People's Republic of Oregon. But as we glance at the news, we of course see that the U.S. lost 263,000 jobs in September alone. More details emerging of this bizarre David Letterman CBS blackmail plot, but anything coming out of CBS shouldn't surprise you. And there seems to be a lot of media, celebrity, tabloid distractions. I'm sure this is probably a quite interesting case. Perhaps we'll get into it more later. But as we started the show with, like I said, the Junior Boys, I've liked that song for a while, especially love the synth melody that comes in at that last third. They're going to be in town on the 11th, so I'm thinking of them anyway. But of course, the song that says too young, it was just too perfect to pass up. Director Roman Polanski arrested in Switzerland. This happened, I believe, late Saturday. I heard about it Sunday morning as I was frantically trying to get ready for work, but also trying to get up a post on the website because I know that once I get to work, I'm not doing any website stuff. But I like to get the site updated in the morning so that it's fresh. But I digress. By way of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and again, this is last Sunday, September 27th, director Roman Polanski was arrested in Switzerland as he arrived in the country for a film festival and could be extradited to the United States to face 32-year-old charges of having sex with a 13-year-old girl, the Associated Press reported. As well, you can hit that link and go to the Associated Press, as well as more from the AFP and all around the world. Polanski, director of such acclaimed films as Rosemary's Baby, Chinatown, and The Pianist, was scheduled to receive an honorary award at the Zurich Film Festival. The Swiss Justice Ministry said in a statement that U.S. authorities have sought the 76-year-old's arrest since 2005, not to mention 1978. There was a valid arrest request, and we knew when he was coming, ministry spokesman Guido Balmer told the AP. That's why he was taken into custody. The U.S. would now need to make a formal extradition request. Polanski fled the U.S. in 1978, 1 year after pleading guilty to unlawful sexual intercourse with the underage girl, because the judge in the case planned to renege on the plea agreement. The girl said he plied her with champagne and half a quaalude during a photo shoot at Jack Nicholson's house while Jack was away.
Oscar-winning director Roman Polanski is fighting hard this morning to keep from being extradited to the United States. A Hollywood fugitive had been hiding in plain sight for three decades, but was finally arrested over the weekend. CBS News correspondent Sheila McVicker has the latest from London. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning, Harry. Well, the transatlantic struggle over the fate of Roman Polanski is escalating this morning as both France and Poland say they will press Switzerland for his release and say they plan to appeal to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to have the charges set aside. It was a day Roman Polanski had been dreading and by this time thought might never come. But U.S. prosecutors, knowing Polanski planned to travel to Switzerland to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award, laid a trap. A warrant authorizing the Swiss to arrest him.
It took this long because he was a fugitive. Well, now he's no longer a fugitive. He was arrested pursuant to a warrant issued by over three decades ago.
In 1977, Polanski plied a 13-year-old girl with champagne and drugs and then raped her. A charge reduced to a single count of unlawful sexual intercourse, which he pled guilty to. Convinced the judge was going to renege on the plea bargain deal, Polanski fled the U.S.
Well, I, as you say, ran away because I think that I was very unfortunate to have a judge who misused justice.
That judge is now dead. A judicial review this year did find there was misconduct, but the charges could not be set aside as Polanski was a fugitive. Fearing renewed attention, Polanski's victim, Samantha Geimer, who accepted a cash settlement from him, has said she does not want the case reopened.
The publicity was so terrible that, and so immediate, that it just overshadowed everything that happened that night.
Since fleeing, Polanski has lived carefully, safe in France, because as a French citizen, he could not be extradited. Fellow artists have reacted with anger, and France's foreign minister, a friend of the director's, called his arrest not nice.
News this morning, Harry, that the director has just hired a lawyer in Switzerland to fight that extradition request. That is what the foreign ministers of both France and Poland say, that as a 76-year-old, he posed no risk, and that his talents and achievements should be respected. The district attorney in L.A. says until he's back in court, there won't be any justice.
Sheila McVicker in London this morning, thank you. Joining us now from Los Angeles is CBS News legal analyst Lisa Bloom. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning.
How shocked must Roman Polanski have been to have been arrested? Will he be extradited?
I think he will be. Under our treaty with Switzerland, somebody facing these kinds of charges should be extradited. The real question is, what has taken so long? He had a home in Switzerland. He's been there many, many times over the years. Apparently, he has escaped extradition all of those previous times. Mostly, though, he's been living in France, and our treaty with France prevented him from being extradited, so he was safe there, but clearly he's safe no longer.
So is it clear to you, then, that the district attorney in Los Angeles continued to pursue this case even after all of these decades?
I think they did. They say that they did, especially in the last few years. I mean, it's hard to understand exactly what went on behind the scenes, but the district attorney here is saying that at least half a dozen times in previous years, they tried to get Roman Polanski, and they just were unable to do so. I don't know if he was tipped off, if he was just lucky. We don't know exactly what happened.
The civil case was solved, so to speak, with a check. The victim in this case really wants it all basically to seemingly go away, but that's not how the state feels about it.
That's a very important point, Harry. This is a crime against the people of the state of California, as all crimes are. And so a civil settlement does not end it. This is a man who fled on the eve of sentencing because he was concerned he was going to get a harsher sentence than he expected under the plea bargain. He's been a fugitive for 30 years. He still faces sentencing here in California. It's irrelevant legally that he has a civil settlement with the complaining witness.
Mm-hmm. And if he ends up being brought back to California, what's the likelihood that he would do serious time?
Well, he does have an issue pending regarding judicial misconduct, and the court has said in the past when his attorneys have tried to argue that, he cannot argue that while he's a fugitive. He has to be brought back, then the argument can be raised. If he prevails on that argument, he might get no jail time.
And what about the statute of limitations?
No, because he already has been convicted. Okay. He already pleaded guilty to the child rape charge back in 1978.
That was a clip from CBS News. Now this from Bloomberg. Filmmaker Polanski fights extradition to U.S. from Switzerland. Filmmaker Roman Polanski will fight extradition to the U.S. following his arrest in Switzerland at the request of California prosecutors who want him brought back for leaving the country in 1978 before he was sentenced for having sex with a 13-year-old girl. Prosecutors became aware of Polanski's travel plans last week and through the U.S. Justice Department asked that he be arrested. Jane Robeson, a spokeswoman for the Los Angeles County District Attorney Steve Cooley, said in a phone interview to Bloomberg. Extraditing Polanski could take several months, Robeson said. The request for Polanski's arrest wasn't related to his failed attempt this year to have the 1977 case thrown out. She said, quote, it's because he's been a fugitive. Los Angeles prosecutors made prior efforts to obtain Polanski's arrest abroad, the latest one in July 2007 when the director visited Israel, according to a statement posted yesterday on the DA's website. That effort failed because Polanski left Israel before the Israeli authorities received additional details they requested, this all according to the statement. A couple few updates posted up yesterday beneath this story. Defense strategies could keep Polanski out of prison. This from the Los Angeles Times. Prosecutors have yet to say what punishments they'll pursue if the director is extradited, but experts say the defense's strongest option is asking that the case be dismissed for judicial misconduct. Quick headline again from the Los Angeles Times. In the Polanski case, is it Hollywood versus Middle America? And as an example of this, we'll grab a quick bit from the Washington Post on their post-partisan blog. Woody Allen defends Polanski and the moralizers go wild. LOL. That was my first reaction at seeing Woody Allen's name on the top of a petition demanding justice for director Roman Polanski. Here, after all, was one pervert using his supposed good name in defense of another. A little like Billy the Kid speaking up for Jesse James. The last bit, again, from the Los Angeles Times, L.A. County District Attorney defends pursuit of Polanski case. That's all I have posted up on this main director, Roman Polanski, arrested in Switzerland, post on MediaMonarchy.com. I had originally planned to do a whole long spiel on all of this, but time kind of slipped away, and there was actually too many books, too many pages to scan, too much information to go over. So what we're going to do is just do a thumbnail, and hopefully we're going to flesh it out further very, very soon. So having said that, here we go. First, mentioning Woody Allen, as I wear my Woody Allen t-shirt right now. Woody Allen's name was probably at the top of that list because his last name is Allen. There are also Martin Scorsese and tons and tons of other people on there. And yes, of course, this now brings up the Hollywood versus Middle America in this whole phony, ridiculous debate. But, oh, I don't care what your political beliefs are, you just, you know, make your entertainment. As if people in Hollywood have no right to speak out about anything, Dixie Chicks, what have you. You pay their salary. You're the idiot that gives them a bunch of money. This case, to me, is another example of people being underinformed, but that not, you know, not for a second do people let being misinformed, underinformed, uninformed, and it doesn't stop them from having a big-ass, loud-ass opinion, though. It's It's interesting to note that California is spending all this money. Meanwhile, they're also purging their prisons because they are hemorrhaging money and about to break off into the ocean. And they kind of explained it in the CBS clip, at least just a little bit, that the girl in question, Samantha Geimer, G-E-I-M-E-R, she has loudly, repeatedly said, "I forgive him. I want this to go away." She, trying to be a regular person who wants this story over and done with because it provides far more pain than it does to at least someone who can afford good attorneys and good coverage and can hide out all over the world. But I guess I just don't understand the legal intricacies whereby if the victim says, "I don't care anymore," the case still goes on and on because, again, as they said in the clip, this was a crime against the people of California. But as we just mentioned, there are lots of other crimes against the people of California that we don't seem to be hearing about anymore because it's all wild moralizing right now. What I didn't realize last week, and this is what I'm just going to try and give the quick thumbnail sketch of. I mentioned last week that Susan Atkins had died in prison at the age of 61. Susan Atkins being one of the main Manson murderers, having a physical hand in the murder of Roman Polanski's wife, Sharon Tate. She died in prison last Thursday, and we made a brief mention of that on last week's show. That same day, a story came out about John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas, also of this same Summer of Love, Sinister Forces, California scene. The story came out about possible incest with his daughter, Mackenzie Phillips, who people my age will probably most remember her as being on One Day at a Time. Roman Polanski had John Phillips investigated over his possible involvement in the murder of Sharon Tate. Why? Because Polanski hooked up with John Phillips' actual wife, Michelle Phillips, also of the Mamas and the Papas. So John Phillips and Roman Polanski hated each other. And then the third thing was that Polanski got arrested Saturday. So in the course of like 72 hours, we saw Susan Atkins die, Manson murderer, killed Sharon Tate. We saw John Phillips' incest story come out, and then we saw Polanski arrested. This instantly brought to mind the return and the resurge of these, what author Peter Lavenda calls, sinister forces. I'll tell you right now, I'm trying very hard to get in touch with Peter Lavenda to go over this and all the bizarre connections and coincidences. So I'm working on that, and hopefully that will come very soon. I got in touch with Chris Milligan at Trine Day. I got in touch with Heinrich at Red Ice Radio, trying to track down Peter Lavenda for an interview on this topic. Again, having said that, the connections between Roman Polanski and the Manson family and mind control and the occult and Aleister Crowley, or not Aleister Crowley, pardon me, Anton LaVey being a technical advisor on Polanski's film Rosemary's Baby, which coincidentally was shot in the Dakota building where coincidentally John Lennon would be shot a decade or two later. You'll, of course, recall the main reveal in the film Chinatown is that it's incest. Nah, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. The last thing I'll say, and again, I was going to do copious notes and scan book pages and go through all this all very detailed, but we don't have time, and I'd rather do it with the author, Peter Lavenda. And I couldn't bring a stack of his books in to read from today. So again, everything I just told you is off the top of my head as I've been studying it not only this last week, but for the last several years. The kicker for me, and again, this is it the Illuminati bloodlines pulling every string, pushing every button, making every single thing happen? Absolutely not. I think calling it sinister forces is pretty damn descriptive. Here's the kicker for me. On the night of June 5th, 1968, John Frankenheimer, the director of the original film, The Manchurian Candidate, which was about a mind-controlled assassin who killed a presidential candidate, Frankenheimer was having a little get-together at his Malibu house, featuring, among other folks, Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski. Their guest of honor that evening was a guy named Robert Francis Kennedy. Later that night, John Frankenheimer, the director of The Manchurian Candidate, drove Bobby Kennedy to the Ambassador Hotel, where he would be shot by a mind-controlled assassin. Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate and the director of The Manchurian Candidate literally sat at the Last Supper of RFK. The connections go on and on and on. And that, my friends, is sinister forces. That's all I can say about all of that right now. Again, it is one of the big debates everyone's having about Polanski, and should a great artist be free to do whatever they want? No, of course not. I even saw a comment, and again, all this stuff comes from F-Book, where you see all kinds of friends and family and people you don't really know and people you know really well, and we all are saying and doing all these things that sometimes makes me just want to start flame wars with everybody. Someone threw in some comment about, oh, maybe Woody Allen and Polanski should both move to Iran, where they could marry girls that are like 9 years old. I was like, damn, you even found a way to work the latest fear-mongering, war-mongering over Iran into this discussion about Polanski. But, again, I digress. We're going to cover a few other history mystery items, the next being the death of William Safire. And that's S-A-F-I-R-E. It actually originally did not have the E. I believe he was born Israeli, added the E on the end so it would be easier to pronounce. William Safire, columnist and Nixon speechwriter, has died at the age of 79. This from the Associated Press. William Safire, the conservative columnist and word warrior who feared no politician or corner of the English language, died Sunday at 79. The Pulitzer Prize winner died at a hospice in Rockville, Maryland. The cause of death was pancreatic cancer. Safire spent more than 30 years writing on the op-ed page of the New York Times, in his On Language column in the New York Times Magazine, and more than a dozen books. Safire traced the origins of words and everyday phrases such as straw man, under the bus, and the proof is in the pudding. Safire penned more than 3,000 columns, aggressively defending civil liberties and Israel, while also tangling with political figures. Bill Clinton famously wanted to punch the curmudgeonly columnist in the nose after Safire called his wife a congenital liar. As a speechwriter in the Nixon White House, William Safire penned Vice President Spiro Agnew's famous phrase, "nattering nabobs of negativism," a tongue-in-cheek alliteration that Safire claimed was directed not at the press, but at those Vietnam defeatists.
William Safire dead at 79, the New York Times columnist, also known to those of us in the speech community as one of the premier speechwriters of the 20th century, writing speeches for both President Nixon and Vice President Agnew. He'll forever go down in history as the author of the nattering nabobs of negativism, that alliteration that Spiro Agnew used to condemn the so-called liberal Eastern media establishment. To this day, it still is a phrase that brings a smile to my face. It's funny, it's clever, it generated headlines. William Safire was very unpredictable. On the one hand, he was a Republican hack, Republican PR person. I don't mean hack in a disparaging way. He was a Republican political operative. He also had a long and distinguished career as a PR representative with his own firm many, many years before he ever went to the Nixon White House. He had an incredibly eclectic career, dropped out of college after only a year and a half, quickly created a fascinating and just incredibly interesting client base for his PR firm, then working in the White House, the impact he had with his words on Vice President and the President will go down in history, and then leaping from there to the New York Times as a columnist, which back then especially was not a leap people made. Many of us grew up reading his books on language. He had a tremendous love of language and words, even up until his death, writing weekly columns in the New York Times magazine. So, William Safire, you are a speechwriter, and an extraordinary crafter of great speeches. I'm T.J. Walker.
Now, that was kind of a strange clip to play, but I, at the time, couldn't really find many news clips related to the death of William Safire. So that dude, TJWalker.com, he's kind of a public speaker. Not motivational, but he's in it for the words. So, politics aside, that's definitely what we tip our hat to. The word warriors. A strange related note coming by way of boingboing.net, as many strange and interesting things do. The speech William Safire wrote for Nixon in case the Apollo 11 astronauts got stranded on the moon. There is a scan of the actual teletype in event of moon disaster. To H.R. Haldeman from Bill Safire, July 18th, 1969. It essentially says, "Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace." That's very good. So, there you have it. William Safire, conservative columnist, Israel Furster, and Nixon speechwriter, dead at the age of 79. Now, when I went to play that clip, I realized I actually skipped a clip I was going to play related to the Polanski polemic. But now I don't really have time to go back and pick it up. Perhaps we'll pick it up later, or we'll put something else special together. The clip is linked up in the posting, and it's an interview with Marina Zinovich, the director of last year's amazing documentary, Roman Polanski, Wanted and Desired, which pretty well makes a case for judicial misconduct of the late Lawrence J. Rittenband. However, we have to keep moving forward. Tests on skull fragment cast doubt on Hitler suicide story, but Russia cast doubt on that new theory. This by way of the Telegraph. Officials in Moscow say they have no record of a U.S. researcher who claims to have examined a skull fragment said to belong to the late Nazi dictator. Russia responded after a History Channel documentary claimed to have subjected the bone, which is kept in Moscow, to DNA testing and discovered it belonged to a woman, not Hitler. The program suggested its findings bolstered the theory that Hitler did not commit suicide in 1945, as is widely thought. But Vladimir Kozlov, deputy director of Russia's State Archive, where the fragment is stored, has cast doubt on this program, the History Channel program. He says he has no record, that an American scientist called Nick Bellantoni, B-E-L-L-A-N-T-O-N-I, Nick Bellantoni, who was shown in the program taking samples from the skull, had ever been granted access. Nobody with that name, Bellantoni, has been into the archive for the last 4 years, Vladimir Kozlov told Russian news agency RIA Novosti. None of the directors or people who grant permission for this kind of thing know his name. Fascinating. The Hitler... That's right. That's what we kind of jokingly call it, the Hitler Channel. The History Channel documentary is called Hitler's Escape. We have other links to a book and website of the same name, hitlersescape.com. More from Straits Times. running Google searches on Nick Bellantoni. You can go to The Guardian as well as the AFP. Fascinatingly enough, by way of the Jerusalem Post, a nice little supplemental related article here by way of Edwin Black, author of, among other great books, IBM and the Holocaust, from September 23rd of this year, When Zionists Made Deals with the Nazis. And they did, and we did. But somehow we just forget all that stuff. It all goes away. None of that fits into the official story of the big one. Continuing the meme of history mystery is lots of, again, past is prologue. That's why, again, we started the show with the quote. Prologue to a farce or a tragedy. FBI releases doctored tapes of OKC bombing aftermath. This came out Monday morning. This was the second day in a row where I woke up early for work and saw that some amazing news had broken, and I furiously tried to post it before I had to go to work. The first being Polanski, the second being OKC. From the Associated Press. Long secret security tapes showing the chaos immediately after the 1995 bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building are blank in the minutes before the blast and appear to have been edited, an attorney who obtained the recording said Sunday. The real story is what's missing, said Jesse Trentadue. T-R-E-N-T-A-D-U-E, Jesse Trentadue, a Salt Lake City attorney who obtained the recordings through the Federal Freedom of Information Act as part of an unofficial inquiry he is conducting into the April 19, 1995 bombing that killed 168 people and injured hundreds more. Trentadue gave copies of the tapes to the Oklahoman newspaper, which posted them online at newsok.com, and also provided copies to the Associated Press. The tapes, turned over by the FBI, came from security cameras various companies had mounted outside office buildings near the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. They are blank at points before 9:02 a.m. when a truck bomb carrying a 4,000-pound fertilizer and fuel oil bomb detonated in front of the building. Four cameras in four different locations going blank at basically the same time on the morning of April 19th, 1995. There ain't no such thing as coincidence, Trentadue said. He said government officials claim the security cameras did not record the minutes before the bombing because, quote, they had run out of tape, or, quote, the tape was being replaced. The interesting thing is that they spring back on after 9:02. The absence of footage from these crucial time intervals is evidence that there's something there that the FBI doesn't want anybody to see. More from the Philadelphia Inquirer, KJRH.com, Wikipedia, InfoWars, Google searches, truthinjustice.org, KOKCRadio.com, and an update from Raw Story. FBI denies editing OKC bombing tapes. The FBI says it did not edit videotapes of the aftermath of the 1995 bombing of OKC Federal Building before turning them over to an attorney who's conducting an unofficial inquiry. The FBI turned over more than two dozen tapes taken from security cameras on buildings and other locations around the federal building to Salt Lake City attorney Jesse Trentadue, who obtained them through FOIA. Trentadue said the tapes are blanks at various times in the minutes before the blast. They have been edited. They don't do anything by accident. More supplemental information for you there by way of the Associated Press, as well as the great archive on OKC from whatreallyhappened.com. A few flashback links for you, such as this one going all the way back to December 2006, FBI chided for OKC bombing investigation. We also have, from February 2007, McVeigh had high-level help. That's from the Salt Lake Tribune. And the third flashback, from March of 08, Dana Rohrabacher links World Trade Center 93 bombing to the Oklahoma City bombing, as well as 9/11. The last bit on this new release of doctored tapes concerning the bombing aftermath, we're going to hit from a compilation of news clips from out of Oklahoma by way of Alex Jones' landmark documentary, The Road to Tyranny. Okay, CCTV tapes cover up.
And the details are chilling. We'll also focus on surveillance cameras, cameras that caught the bombing on tape, and maybe the men behind the bombing. The news channel has new information tonight that there's a chance surveillance tapes could be the smoking gun evidence. And we asked candid questions in a rare face-to-face meeting with ATF officials close to the investigation. We learned that video collected from downtown businesses the morning of April 19th may someday be played before a jury. Officials won't say who or what exactly is on the tape. However, numerous sources have confirmed the tapes exist and that they reveal more than one bomber.
So what evidence are they asking for? They're asking for video taken from the Ryder truck from the Regency Towers.
Well, Kevin, it's a question we've all been asking. We've been asking that question since we first broke the story that surveillance cameras aimed at the federal building could have captured all those involved on tape. Now, sources have confirmed those tapes exist and that they show more than one bomber. The FBI also confirmed those tapes exist when they refused to release them, claiming the video is part of a criminal investigation. And now, for the first time, we get an on-the-record response from the head of the Dallas office, ATF. We learned that videotape could be unveiled as part of the prosecution's case. No officials will discuss specifically what's on the video, but we have been able to recreate some of what may have been captured by downtown surveillance cameras through the eyes of the witnesses. Now, you're looking at a computer recreation of the final movements of the Ryder truck, according to the people who crossed its path at 5th and Harvey, moments before the explosion. Tonight at 10, the witnesses will detail their memories of how they believe the suspects carried out the crime and made their getaway. Now, all these accounts share a common and unsettling similarity. The witnesses say they saw several accomplices, including the infamous John Doe number 2. ATF officials tell us the elusive John Doe is still part of this case, but will not comment any further. However, they did tell us that there's a lot about the case we don't know yet. Information you can't find in the indictments against Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, and Michael Fortier.
It was just hours after the bombing when the news channel first told you about the possibility that surveillance cameras may have captured the explosion and the killers on tape. Our sources and sources for the LA Times describe what's actually on those tapes. The information shows some huge surprises, the biggest that it may have been John Doe number 2, not Timothy McVeigh, who detonated the bomb.
14-year-old news clips from Oklahoma describing all of the cameras and all of the things that some have seen but the rest of us can't see of what was going on around Oklahoma City. Again, we don't have time to go into the full story of the Oklahoma City bombing. Too much info. But it's all there for you. And again, I've added the supplemental links. If you're new to this, if you don't believe it, if you think I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, look it up yourself. So we mentioned linking the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center. Do you remember that one? That was the one where FBI informant Imad Salem, former Egyptian army officer, was told by his FBI handler, John Antisev, to give the perpetrators the real bombing equipment and to let the bombing go forward. You remember that? So we hit that flashback that made the mention of WTC 93, as well as OKC, as well as 9/11, which brings us to this. Yet another 9/11 widow calling for a new investigation.
My name is Jane Palacino.
On 9/11, I lost my husband, Steve, who was 48 years old, and my husband of 23 years.
I was part of an average family almost 8 years ago, and today I spent a day in the city in an office, a city office, trying to compare signatures so that we might be able to get the investigation that never was done that we're all entitled to. I really think that we all deserve answers. Most of us don't even know what questions need to be answered. So that if the office, city office that I was in, sat in front of a computer and I am comparing signatures on a list of names
where the city tried to stop the vote for a new investigation. New York City people gave their names, wrote their names down on signatures or petitions, and now the city sort of put a halt to that because the signatures were not enough or they weren't correct. So New York City can is setting us up in there, and they got lawyers to allow for us to do the recount under the guise or the supervision of a city person, and we will hopefully get to a point where there's enough inconsistencies so that we can document the fact that, yes, there's enough people here in New York that signed on for a real investigation. But I'd like to think that maybe if there is another investigation now, that maybe people will have more of a, their radar up in terms of what's really going on. Fox Cotton's got through 8 years ago. There hadn't been a hijacking in 20 years. All of a sudden, there was a hijacking. Four of them, same time. Building 7 has always been a puzzle lid. And this is what I have to find myself. I'm on the computer every morning trying to read articles. And I read them, and I have to sort of put the brakes on. Okay, yeah, they're back on this story again with Building 7. In the beginning, it was like, oh my God, you know, there were bombs here, bombs there, and what was in Building 7 that they were trying to lose, information that they were trying to get rid of, and then your mind goes to something else, and it jumps and jumps. How big could this be? Who could be involved? And I just, like I said, it's exhausting. I couldn't, you know, you can't get up from the computer and then just go and make coffee or breakfast, you know? You gotta, you can't wrap your arms around it. It's so big that I'm thinking that once the lid is off, it's just gonna blow sky high. Even learning that the president didn't want any kind of investigation, it's like, that's when you first start realizing, whoa, wait a minute here. Not only was that not treated as a crime scene, nobody now is going to investigate it. It's maddening, but you can't, I didn't have the energy in those early days to really go there. Every day I surprise myself. The surprises are good or bad. So, surprise, I'm coming here today. I decided on Monday I can handle this. My week worked out all right. So here I am. Thank goodness for this New York City Can organization. And that's another thing. Like the Jersey girls, there always seems to be little saviors, you know, in and around. People think after 8 years that, you know, you're done, you don't need any help anymore. But the fact is that 9/11 does happen every day. Not just in my life, but in people all over the world, they should know that it still continues to claim lives. So if there are people who are trying to get another one started, I wanted to try to, yeah, that was my motivation. I want to see a regular investigation. Why not? Everybody should want to see that. I'm sorry, this is only intended for city people to sign these petitions. Technically, everybody all over our country should have the right to say, we need an investigation there. All those murders. I mean, there was many months I just said, oh, I lost my husband on the line and lost him. Well, that helped me to think, oh, yeah, he was lost. He never came home. But, you know, now I can say murdered. He was murdered. And could that have been, I really want to know, could that have been stopped in some way, shape, or form by our government? Who was lax? Where were the missing pieces? And hopefully a new investigation will happen, and maybe we can get an answer to really what went on and why things happened. A tip of the iceberg we're looking at, just a tip of the iceberg. That's what I really feel in my heart.
9/11 widow Jane Policino courageously speaks out in favor of a proper investigation into her husband's murder, spurred by the NYC CAN petition drive, nyccan.org, the New York City Coalition for Accountability Now. Jane was one of the 50-plus volunteers who helped prove that enough voters illegally signed the historic petition. On the 27th of September, NYC CAN and thousands of New Yorkers converged on the streets for the March for Truth. So that posting is yet another 9/11 widow calling for a new investigation, which takes us to the latest other 9/11 updates, loose change, lawsuits, payouts, and steal. First, I've lost track of how many installments and updates there have been of the venerable Loose Change documentary series. I think at this point, Jason Burmes isn't involved, and it may just be a Dylan Avery operation. But my man Zeke at Veracity Videos has the latest Loose Change release, Loose Change 9/11, An American Coup, narrated by Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata. More on him in a second. Thousands of people have illnesses related to the 9/11 attacks. That's from the Huffington Post. And from Newsday.com, thousands of 9/11 workers can now sue over their illnesses. That would be a lot of their illnesses related to the toxic dust that Christine Todd Whitman and the EPA said was safe to breathe because they wanted to reopen Wall Street. Because they had already pulled their big terror op, they needed to get started on their, and then, upcoming financial op. FBI payout for Egyptian over 9/11. This from the Big Brother Corporation, that's the BBC. An Egyptian man has received a $250,000 payout from the FBI because of the way he was treated following 9/11. Abdallah Higazi, 38, sued the FBI, saying he had been unjustly criminally charged and imprisoned for 34 days. He had been accused of lying to investigators about an aviation radio found in his hotel room in New York. Mr. Higazi said he told conflicting stories about the radio because he had been intimidated by an FBI agent. He asserted that the agent shouted at him, lied to him, and threatened to endanger his family. So that would be another case of witness intimidation. The man known as the 9/11 judge, Alvin Hellerstein, his latest greatest ruling by way of the Associated Press is that the CIA can keep their 9/11 videotape info secret. A judge cited, of course, national security concerns in ruling Wednesday, that's 2 days ago, that the CIA does not have to release hundreds of documents related to the destruction of videotapes of 9/11 detainee interrogations that used harsh methods. So that's essentially saying you can tear up the documents related to the videotapes that you tore up related to the patsies that you tore up. Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata headlined the New York City Coalition for Accountability Now March for Answers in New York on September 27th. Daniel Sinjata, of course, being one of the more prominent and visible 9/11 truthers. But another one, someone you probably haven't heard of, but we referenced him a couple weeks ago on our 9/11 anniversary episode as we went over my 11 points of contention with the official story. That would be 9/11 whistleblower Anthony Schaefer. He related to the Abel Danger saga, which did or didn't identify Muhammad Atta and all the other guys as, of course, terrorists, but that didn't stop them from coming into the country. Because even when folks like J. Michael Springman tried to deny their visas, he was told, don't worry, their terror designation is just a cover. Look it up. So, 9/11 whistleblower Anthony Schaefer, he also endorses the NYC CAN petition. From the New York Post, a concrete plan to avoid cops at WTC. This still goes into the police and the fire department fighting with each other in downtown New York over Ground Zero. We saw it before, of course, before when it was related to Giuliani calling off the search because they had rescued the thing that they were most concerned about, and that was the Nova Scotia gold buried underneath that looked like someone was trying to steal it because it was in transit. One of my latest videos posted up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy is the strange sight of WTC steel being hauled back to New York City.
You're looking at a live picture of I-95 North, where a truck procession with a police escort is moving steel from the World Trade Center towers originally. All that steel has been at the National Institutes of Science and Technology for the last 3 years. Currently now on their way back to New York City.
The last bit of 9/11 updates is more new footage of the 9/11 attack. New footage from the moment the second plane crashed into the second tower on 9/11 has been released. These new images are just a few minutes that we can see posted up thanks to DailyGalaxy.com as well as many other places. Just a few minutes among hundreds of hours of amateur video and images being collected by the National September 11 Memorial and Museum at the World Trade Center, which has launched a website containing examples of citizen journalism of the tragedy. 9/11 was probably the most widely documented event in human history, witnessed by literally billions of people in real time around the world, said museum director Alice Greenwald. Now that right there is the thing that makes a lot of people say, well, what could possibly be suspicious about the story? It's so well documented. We know everything about it. No one could keep a secret. It would come out. It would take thousands of people to pull off something like that. Again, don't have time to go into it right here. I recommend you hopping back a few weeks and picking up that episode 140, 9/11 anniversary episode 8 years later, where you can get, among other things, my 11 points of contention, brought to you by way of coreofcorruption.com and historycommons.org, where, again, I don't have to believe that 9/11 is not what they say it is. You've probably heard folks say that belief is something you have in something you can't prove, such as God. Sorry. However, I know that if you go to FBI.gov and look at Bin Laden's wanted poster, there's no reference to 9/11 on there. Because why? When they were contacted, they say, we have, quote, no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the attacks of 9/11. And then you get into the warnings, the prior knowledge, the insider trading, the drills, the stand downs, the power downs, the whistleblowers, the software, on and on and on. Now, what all this has done has set the table for us. And again, as I've said before, I'll say it again. We're nonpartisan here on MediaMonarchy.com. Every 4 or 8 years, you throw out the disliked party and you bring in some new bums that you think are going to change things. It's not working out so well, is it? Hopefully you have buyer's remorse. Because Obama never had the fake mainline right, but he is rapidly losing the left. The well-meaning, want-to-be-progressive left. This means you. So what this has all set the table for, and again, Obama hasn't repealed the Patriot Act, he hasn't stopped anything, they're not going to close Guantanamo by January, any of that crap you thought they were going to do. Things continue to get amazingly worse. And all the things we've said before in the previous hour, I suppose, are the prologue. Past is prologue. To a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. So having said that, I'll now mention that we're now into hour number 2 of episode 143 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 2nd, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. As always, huge thanks to the list of affiliates who broadcast live and rebroadcast Media Monarchy. My home base, the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, as well as ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. So what have all those past events done? What have they set? What kind of table have they set for us that we're about to sit down and have a big yummy meal? Police State International, G20, Fake Terror, and the American Police Force. We played clips and went over a bit of the action, and again, as they say, the real action is in the reaction, all surrounding the recent G20 event in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. More disgusting news continued to spill out in the days and weeks later, and we're going to run through those, but we'll kick it off with a quick mention from the Times Online and a quote from famed author and historian and 9/11 truther Gore Vidal, who notes that we'll have a dictatorship soon in the United States. From the Deutsche Press Agency, the G20 began amid massive police presence and protests. We also have tons of video. I stopped trying to save it all. I couldn't even do it all. So contained within these next several links are multiple video clips shot by citizen journalists, something you should be or should soon become. Police intimidate and assault students at the University of Pittsburgh. That's by way of iReport.com. More from Raw Story. G20 police break up assembly at the University of Pittsburgh. LRAD mounted on truck terrorizes Pittsburgh residents. That's the long-range acoustic device. That's the sound cannons, the sound weapons. Remember all those things that were supposed to be for those brown people who hate our freedoms? That's right, they're for you. They're for you when you don't want to go along with forced vaccinations or a new financial world order. It's for you. More video of LRADs used against demonstrators. Danger Room points out, quite importantly, that sonic warfare erupts in Pittsburgh, Honduras. So here and there. Think it can't happen here? It is. It did. It will. More video from the G20 that the corporate media will never show you. That's by way of InfoWars. BBC video reveals police violence at the G20. Strangely enough, and I don't know the latest updates on this, but I've seen photos and I've seen the video of military police seemingly kidnapping a G20 protester and shoving him into an unmarked car. Then, of course, all the neocons claim the video is fake. And surprise, surprise, we said it last week. Here it is. There's the photo. Provocateur cops disguised as anarchists at the G20. That's how they roll. That's a false flag attack. Which I'll mention, that's one of the 100 ways that we are winning this information war that James Corbett recently pointed out in the 100th episode of CorbettReport.com, is that all these truth movements have made words like false flag and inside job part of the vernacular. Provocateur cops disguised as anarchists at G20. Surprise, surprise. Military riot thugs detain, dehumanize, and torture American citizens. RoboCops come to Pittsburgh. That's from truthout.org. G20 protesters ordered to stand trial. That's from the post-gazette.com. So yes, some of the protesters are going to have to go to trial. I believe this even maybe has something to do with Luke Radowski of We Are Change. And that's just some of the ugly updates on the recent G20 terror events in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Further down the list on Police State International, a sudden outbreak of domestic terror threats. That's by way of Yahoo. And then the latest update, again, from Yahoo. By way of Reuters, U.S. officials worry about homegrown terrorism plots. Top Obama officials on Wednesday said recent arrests in alleged bombing plots highlight the challenges they face combating self-radicalized homegrown extremists, as well, of course, all infirmers in the U.S. determined to carry out attacks. This, of course, references Najibullah Zazi, an Afghan-born man living legally in Colorado, who was charged last week with planning a bombing attack in the U.S., and also a Jordanian man who overstayed a visa permit was accused of trying to bomb a Dallas skyscraper. So that's Dallas and Denver. We, of course, note that all the curious things seem to come out of Denver. However, breaking it down, Patsy arrested with FBI-supplied explosives in the Dallas bomb plot. Yet again, another case of what will probably be a sub-intelligent person who was provocateured and prodded by an FBI informant who gives them the materials. Terrorism suspect pleads not guilty, but of course held without bail. That's from the Washington Post. However, my man Alex Constantine points out that the FBI-stung terrorist targeted a Dallas office tower where CIA agent and Dallas County GOP chairman works. Fascinating connections. Portable pain weapon may end up in police hands. That's from NewScientist.com, which, when I saw the photo of the weapon, that reminded me, and I haven't posted up the flashback link way back, I think probably one of the first few posts on MediaMonarchy.com back in September of 2005. Set your phasers to stun. Gun looks exactly the same. Portable pain weapon coming soon to a town near you. Here's an interesting note. 2 dozen guns, TNT, and an anti-tank launcher found with a neo-Nazi father and son. But guess what? That's not terrorism. That's from the Sun-Times. And it's interesting, but of course it isn't always this way now. But generally, like we see in the Dallas case and the Denver case, it's those crazy Muslims that want to kill us all and hate our freedoms and yada yada. But when pasty white dudes in middle America, neo-Nazi idiots, get caught with massive amounts of weapons and no FBI informants, it's not front page news. I guess they're not ready to exactly pull the trigger, if you will, on full-blown white Al-Qaeda homegrown terrorism. But we've been tracking it here and we've been preparing you for it. As we said over a year ago, that when the left comes in, we're going to see the shift back to the way it was in the 90s with the Wacos and the McVeighs and the abortion murders and the culture wars. When the Dems are in, the enemy's here. When the Repugs are in, the enemy's over there. The result is the same. Police State International. TSA to expand use of body scanners. That's from USA Today. Secret surveillance team and a new surveillance vehicle has hit Staten Island to crack down on quality of life crimes. That's from SILive.com. Without warrants, police use GPS trackers to follow suspects in Richmond, Virginia. That's from the Richmond Register. Ohio Senate has affirmed state sovereignty. That's from 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And, of course, the fake foundation-funded left have coined a new term. That is called the Tenthers. Which, again, is all thanks to the truth movements. It was 9/11 truthers. That's then what gave rise to the phrase Obama birthers, and now given rise to the phrase Tenthers. We are winning. So the last several things on this Police State International post, G20, fake terror, and the American police force. I haven't fully wrapped my brain around this whole story. But we have news from InfoWars and CNN and all around and YouTube clips and local clips from news stations I don't know of, out of Montana. Montana town occupied by private paramilitary security force. They're called American police force. And it's been called a shady outfit shrouded in suspicion.
Well, members of the American Police Force showed up in Harden yesterday driving vehicles with Harden Police written on them. As Color 8's Nick Law reports, it created quite a stir, especially because Harden doesn't have a city police department.
This was the talk of the town in Harden on Thursday. Mercedes decked down in the City of Harden Police Department decals and driven by American Police Force members. Two Rivers Authority officials say having APF patrol the streets was never part of their agenda.
You know, I have no idea. I really don't, because that's not anything that's been in the discussions that I had with any of them.
As it stands now, the Bighorn County Sheriff's Department is contracted to patrol the city, and APF has no jurisdiction. If that was changed, Peterson claims it would have to go through the city council. As for the jail contract with APF, both sides are yet to agree on a deal, as bondholders rejected it again on Thursday morning.
No, it's a complicated issue. There's a lot of text laws that they're working through, and we're just hoping now. We thought we were going to get it by Tuesday night. We're hoping now we can get it by Friday night.
And Two Rivers Authority officials say the contract only deals with the detention facility and the training center. There's no mention of a homeless shelter, animal shelter, or any other services for the area.
Well, you know, that was never in a contract to begin with. I think it was just kind of on a wish list of what Captain Michael wanted to do here.
American Police Force officials plan on staying in the Harden area for the next month.
And that was Color 8's Nick Law reporting. The exact details of the contract talks between Two Rivers Authority and American Police Force remain under wraps.
A lot of this seems to remain under wraps. Let's see if we can flesh this out as quickly as we can with more from Paul Joseph Watson. Following the earlier report and articles from Paul Joseph Watson and the Prison Planet InfoWars crew, following our earlier report about a paramilitary security force occupying a town in Montana, it has now become clear that the purpose of American police force is to boss a state-of-the-art internment camp that some fear will be used to incarcerate American citizens, as reports come in of the private paramilitary unit setting up roadblocks and harassing citizens in Harden, Montana. A CNN report on the $27 million facility in Harden, Montana, states that it could become Gitmo West and be filled with detainees from Guantanamo Bay and other terrorists. Since the majority of the American people have now been designated as potential domestic terrorists by the federal government, fears are growing that the prison camp will be used to incarcerate citizens against their will during a flu pandemic or any other declared emergency. The Two Rivers Detention Center is a state-of-the-art facility festooned with surveillance cameras and surrounded by razor wire and open land to prevent escape. The camp is also filled with riot equipment such as gas masks, riot helmets, shields and batons, and guns. Since the camp is currently empty, a private paramilitary unit calling itself American Police Force has been hired by local authorities to boss the facility. However, as we reported earlier, APF, which has all the hallmarks of being another Blackwater, has virtually occupied the town, festooned their vehicles with police decals, and started carrying out law enforcement duties. We have the link to that CNN report. Hard Luck, Montana Town pushes to house Gitmo detainees. But we do have more. American Police Force is a Blackwater front group. Contradicting words, Blackwater claims APF illegally using their logos and material, but the American Police Force website page, which clearly states that they run the Blackwater-controlled U.S. Training Center, is now back online after having been down on AmericanPoliceGroup.com/special.html. This story's bizarre. I can't fully flesh it out, but it's very indicative of what has been going on. The last bit here is a good half hour plus video playlist. An exclusive interview from Jack Blood of Deadline Live, who interviews American Police Force spokeswoman Becky Shea. And it's quite interesting, and it's quite fascinating, and it's good work, because Jack Blood, who is a well-known radio host to all those crazy conspiracy theorist people, tinfoil hatters, what he's able to do because he is not as well known a name as someone like an Alex Jones or Coast to Coast or whatever. Jack Blood's able to score some great interviews with folks who would otherwise avoid the Patriot or Truther movements. He's had great interviews with, I believe, Michael Isikoff from Newsweek, the late Tim Russert. Some of those interviews, of course, at some point abruptly end early as the line somehow seems to go dead. And that's usually when they realize that they're under fire and they bail. They being our talking heads and misleaders. So that's all I have for you right there on Police State International, G20, Fake Terror, and the American Police Force. We move now to the latest from Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Change you can indefinitely detain, plus the Pimp Olympics. Which I should glance back at Google News right now. As we mentioned a little bit ago, breaking news. Chicago got dissed for the 2016 Summer Olympics. Even though Obama sent his poverty pimps from Chi-Town over to Copenhagen to try and score the Olympics. And even if Obama scored a second term, which, if his approval ratings are any indication, he will not. But of course, what we've gone over many, many times and what I worry about is that we're mirroring what was going on 8 years ago, where plummeting approval ratings and an agenda that just seemed to be floundering and the wheels were coming off. And then, wouldn't you know it, some catalyzing, catastrophic event happens and everyone rallies around the leader. Rio de Janeiro has won the right to host the 2016 Olympics if you give a flying rat's ass, which I do not. Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, change you can indefinitely detain. Obama reaffirms the power of indefinite detention. This from ABC News. The Obama administration reaffirmed its belief this week. We just talked about beliefs. Just because you believe it doesn't make it true. Just because, you know, at one point it said black people weren't citizens, that doesn't make it true. The Obama administration reaffirmed its belief this week that it has the power to indefinitely detain prisoners at Guantanamo and said it would not reach out and ask Congress to craft legislation to give them the authority. Justice Department spokesman Dean Boyd said that when Congress, on September 18, 2001, gave President George W. Bush the authorization to use force against those behind the 9/11 attacks, lawmakers gave President Obama the power to indefinitely detain prisoners captured in that effort. Quote, Congress has already provided authorization through the 2001 authorization for the use of military force to detain persons who the president determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks of 9/11, persons who harbored those responsible for the attacks, and persons who were part of or substantially supported Taliban or Al-Qaeda forces or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the U.S. or its coalition partners. That could be you, kids. Now, as we'll get to in just a few minutes, recall all your favorite fake conservatives and fake progressives on both sides of the aisle who all approved Shrub's war of terror that is now Obama's war of terror. He's now fighting the right war. And the libs and dems will all love it when we start to blow up Iran. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So that's Obama reaffirming the power of indefinite detention. There's some change, baby. Yeah. Senior Democratic lawmakers have caved in to the FBI in the Patriot Act debate. This from Threat Level. Powerful Senate leaders on Thursday bowed to FBI concerns that adding pesky privacy protections to an expiring provision of the Patriot Act could jeopardize ongoing terror investigations. In an about-face, Senator Patrick Leahy removed privacy protections in a key Patriot Act provision up for renewal before the Senate Judiciary Committee, with the Democrat of Vermont chairs. So again, fake progressives, fake left. They say one thing and do another. As we've tried to point out here many, many times, don't listen to the garbage that they say. Look at the garbage that they do. This would be Leahy. This would be the guy, if you'll recall, several months ago. He was given some lip service about a truth commission. That they were actually going to investigate the war crimes of the previous puppets. Where's that talk now? Ain't going to happen. Unless, of course, we all force it to happen. Oh, here's another shocker. This one from the Deutsche Press Agency. Gitmo won't be closed by January as planned. Surprise, surprise. The U.S. prison for suspected terrorist detainees, that would be brown goat herders and other people with the misfortune to be scooped up by military thugs worldwide. The U.S. prison for suspected terrorist detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, will not be closed by January as planned. So, I guess the American Police Force Two Rivers Detention Center will just have to wait a little bit longer before they can get them foreigners in there. We'll see. On a different note, Obama makes Victoria Espinel the new copyright czar. That's by way, again, of threat level. And the official name is the Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator. Just another example of government getting into every aspect of your life. Interestingly enough, the UK Globe says that Obama has an enemies list. And people like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Dick Cheney, and Alex Jones are supposedly on this list. The Globe has published what appears to be an enemies list drawn up by Obama at the urging of his wife and former President Bubba Clinton. In addition to Beck, Limbaugh, Cheney, the list includes Alex Jones. Alex was included probably for his films The Obama Deception and the forthcoming documentary coming out any moment now, Fall of the Republic, The Presidency of Barack Obama. The UK Globe cited sources close to the Obama administration. This ties in, of course, with Billy Clinton talking again about that vast right-wing conspiracy. As if the two sides are different. There's a vast conspiracy, all right, but it ain't a right-wing one. Or a left-wing one. It's not that simple, kids. Bill Clinton, of course, if you'll recall, was the governor of Arkansas when the CIA was running drugs into the MENA airport with the help of Barry Seal, who was involved in drug running, Vietnam, David Ferry, Lee Harvey Oswald, the whole thing. It's all true, my friends, as the Lemonheads and Orson Welles would say. Secret Service probing Facebook poll. That's from the Washington Post. The SS probes F-book murder poll. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. CNN calls for the creator of the Obama death poll to be arrested and prosecuted. There is a clip to go along with that. However, the wrap-up on this story, juvenile behind the Obama assassination poll won't face charges unless the parents of a child behind a notorious Facebook poll decide to cut his or her allowance. There will be no consequences. The Secret Service has determined that a juvenile was behind the online survey that asked people whether they thought Obama should be assassinated. And they have a screen grab of this poll. Vote in the Obama poll. And the little photo is the remix of the Borat poster with Barack 08 put up. Should Obama be killed? Yes. Maybe. If he cuts my health care, and no. So there's more on that story from the Associated Press and Raw story, and that, again, unfortunately ties into the meme that has surrounded this presidency from its very inception, and that's the Kennedy curse. But we don't have time to go into that right now. Obama may head to Copenhagen after all to pimp for the Chicago Olympics. We now know that he did not, and we now know that Chicago did not, but that was by way of the caucus blog on the New York Times. The one main bit from the New York Times I wasn't able to find online is something that I read in print in the New York Times newspaper while I was on lunch at work, because it had a great quote, and it was essentially Obama saying, I would love to go over to Copenhagen myself, but I'm too busy here trying to get Americans affordable health care, yada yada. So then they kind of changed their tune. It was like, oh, well, I guess health care isn't that important because you're sending your whole coterie over there to make sure this thing happens, and it didn't. Are there larger geopolitical
things going on in this Olympic Pimp Olympic story? Probably. Do I care? Not right now. The last thing we'll say about it is that the Obamas chase the Olympic bauble while the U.S. burns. On a different note, judge rules the FBI cannot bury the interview that Obama's cousin Dick Cheney gave on the Plamegate affair. That's by way of raw story. And pointed out from Alex Constantine, an article from Newsmax, pretty much right-wing reactionary site. Newsmax columnist says that a military coup to resolve the Obama problem is not unrealistic. That came from John Perry. Which, of course, ties into all the other media memes that we've mentioned. Military coups, 7 days in May, Manchurian Candidate, life imitates politics, imitates art, all of it. The last strange note on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, change you can indefinitely detain, plus the Pimp Olympics, from the North Star National. Obama sworn in as world president, where this guy, Ashley Stinnett, I thought it was a joke, but he's really into the idea that the stars have aligned for radical liberals worldwide. Obama is positioning himself to become the world's first de facto president. They talk about the New World Order, and it's all very jokingly and ha ha ha, but it's essentially about his standing in the world and how he goes to the UN or he goes abroad, and he's just greeted and hailed as the Obamasiah that we so derisively call him here. So they close that article by asking the question, will Obama be sworn in as world president? So we'll have to wait and see. So, we've gone over the latest having to do with our slick Madison Avenue branding logos, shirts and stickers and schemes and social networks and garbage that you fell for. We'll shift gears over to the geopolitical scene where we're going to cover Iranoia. I'm not sure if I coined that phrase or not, but that would be the paranoia about Iran, Iranoia, China Empire, and E.U. Blair. Well, we're going to start it off with pointing out, as we said before, but we'll say it again, by way of Kurt Nimmo, liberals and Democrats will support the coming mass murder campaign against Iran. It looks like an attack on Iran is a fait accompli. It's just a matter of timing at this point. Reading the corporate media and much of the so-called progressive media, one hears what amounts to a chant, Iran has nukes, Iran has nukes, or they will very soon. In fact, Iran does not have nuclear weapons. It does not have the capability to build one solitary nuclear bomb, crude or otherwise. Iran has not enriched uranium to the point required to make a bomb. It has enriched uranium for nuclear energy. Iran's uranium enrichment is less than 5% and consistent with fuel for a civilian nuclear power plant. Iran has imposed restrictions on its enrichment program, including ratifying the additional protocol to allow more stringent inspections by the IAEA, operating the uranium enrichment facility at Natanz as a multinational fuel center with the participation of foreign representatives, renouncing plutonium reprocessing, and immediately fabricating all enriched uranium into reactor fuel rods. The IAEA has repeatedly said Iran is not enriching nuclear weapons-grade uranium. But none of this matters. Because the war whores, they either want to go to war there or they want you to think that we're going to go to war there. And perhaps more importantly, they want you to think that we need to go to war there. All the bloviating, all the belly aching. Oh my God, they're going to get us. He said stuff about Israel. Are you really afraid of Iran getting you? As I contemplate that question, as it pops up, and you know, you're sitting in your apartment, or you're in work, or you're in transit somewhere, and as I hear so often the military jets flying overhead. And as I read about what shady private military forces are doing in small towns, when I see what they rolled out at the G20 events. Are you scared of Iran? On this same topic from the foundation-funded phony left Soros machine known as thinkprogress.org, the Pentagon can't imagine a number of destabilizing consequences. In Geneva, the U.S., along with the U.K., France, Russia, China, Germany, and the EU engaged in direct talks with Iran over its nuclear program. ThinkProgress.org asked Dr. Colin Call, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for the Middle East, what the consequences might be if the war hawks had their way. "We're a long ways away from that being an eventuality," Call said, adding that the U.S. is committed to the diplomatic track, noting that military action is not desirable, but then he went on to lay out some sobering ramifications, saying, quote, "It will have an unpredictable set of consequences for the region, but we can imagine a number of destabilizing ones." You can imagine the second or third order consequences, the peace process, and to our outreach to the Muslim world, and all that. And all that jazz. By way of express.co.uk, the Saudis will let Israel bomb Iranian nuclear sites, granting them flyover privileges. If you recall, though, we pointed out perhaps the possibility that the elite scumbags who play countries off of each other and fund both sides until they throw a little bit more funding to the side that they would like to win. Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's former national security advisor and Obama-Saya's chief string puller, he of the grand chessboard, as we noted last week, Zbig said that we should tell Israel that we'll attack their planes if they try and fly over and attack Iran. Grand chessboard indeed. What really starts to get to the heart of what's really going on, Tehran dumps dollar for euro. There it is. On a different note, in a different empire, the Empire State Building was lit up nice and red for the 60th anniversary of Communist China. And everybody loved it, but not everybody liked it. And again, the words, it's where it all is. It's called the Empire State. They don't call it that for nothing. Strange note on the weather wars, as we noted last year, as China was ramping up all their strange weather modification for their Pimp Olympics. China weather magic conjures blue sky for the parade. That's from Reuters. U.S. vows deeper ties with China after 60 years of communist rule. This is from spacewar.com. By way of the French agency press, U.S. Secretary of State, and as we previously noted, a congenital liar, Hillary Clinton on Thursday congratulated China on the 60th anniversary of communist rule, vowing to continue deepening U.S. ties with the increasingly powerful nation. "I would like to extend warm wishes and congratulations to the People's Republic of China on the 60th anniversary of its founding on October 1st. May you have many, many, many more decades to come of forced abortions and complete censorship and a complete totalitarian society, one-child policies, restricted internet. God, we love it. Your slave labor, it's awesome, man. That's why they get all the awards from the UN. Didn't you know that? That's why they get the Most Favored Nation awards. Because they're the test. They're the template for what they want here. As I said before, I'll say it again. Look it up. Russian paratroopers stage war games simulating a NATO attack. That's from Bloomberg. Meanwhile, U.S. and Cuba quietly hold a joint exercise at Guantanamo. Guantanamo, the base that they're not going to close down by January, even though that was one of the main things Obama-Saya said he wanted to do. That's from Vancouver Sun. Interestingly enough, over in my ancestral homeland of Italy, prostitute told all about Silvio Berlusconi on live TV. That's by the way of The Independent. Berlusconi, of course, being the TV and whore pimp that he is. Sorry I'm using the word pimp so much, but it's It's so perfect. Tony Blair to head the EU within weeks. This is from thesun.co.uk. Tony Blair is set to be made the first president of Europe in weeks. He will be nominated by EU leaders in Brussels. If expected, Ireland backs the hated Lisbon Treaty in tomorrow's referendum. Senior government source says if we get a yes vote, it will all move very, very quickly. Tony could be named by the end of October. Even if Ireland votes yes, Poland and the Czech Republic are still to decide. So what's this talk about Ireland voting yes? That would be them voting no again on the treaty they already voted no on before. Irish to go to polls to decide fate of Lisbon Treaty. Second vote against would mean huge setback to long-running plans for EU reform. The Irish, today, began casting votes in a referendum that will decide the future of the EU and its Lisbon Reform Treaty. Around 3 million Irish citizens are being asked to vote on the proposed treaty, a blueprint for reforming how the 27-nation bloc takes decisions and presents itself to the wider world for the second time in less than 18 months. They already voted it down. It really hasn't changed. I forget the precise episode, but it was very recently from Corbett Report, Lisbon Cometh. He goes over the full scope of this Lisbon Treaty being crammed repeatedly down the Irish throats. This is essentially being assimilated into the Borg. We break your back, and then you will be assimilated. We saw it happen recently in Iceland, where their economy was crashed, and now they're being fast-tracked into the European Union. You may think sometimes that the European Union, oh, that's a new thing. But, of course, you recently noted they celebrated their, 50th anniversary? They set it up in stealth and slowly announce it to you. Just like they set up their Patriot Act or sonic weapons. Set them up in advance and then slowly announce them to you. So, the Irish are going to the polls to decide the fate of the Lisbon Treaty. This concerns not only Ireland, not only Europe, not only the European Union, but you and me sitting right here in downtown Portland, Oregon. That's the rundown on geopolitics. Ironoia, China Empire, and EU Blair. We should note, of course, before too recently, and I, again, don't have the flashback up for you, as the website grows and grows and grows over the years, there are now thousands of posts. We're coming up on 4,000 posts on MediaMonarchy.com. We noted sometime last year that Tony Blair converted to Catholicism as basically being one of the sort of occult hoops that he needed to jump through in order to affirm the status that they're now talking about, the head of the EU. Look that up. Now let's jump to the war whores. NORTHCOM, NATO, and the death of women soldiers. Now realize, and again, there's a lot of wordplay in this episode. I love the wordplay, but I'm not doing it in a way to mess with you or to pull the wool over your eyes or to trick you with semantics. I think that with a few clever turns of phrase, again, you can help illuminate, if you will, what's really going on. So I did hesitate on some level to put war whores and the death of women soldiers in the same headline. No disrespect meant, and we'll flesh it out in just a few minutes. We noted last week, posted up on cyberspacewar.com, who wants to work for Cybercom, where you can, of course, fight the net like it's an enemy weapon system and engage the American public in propaganda from the military. Now we've got who wants to work at NORTHCOM, Northern Command, defending the homeland. Which, I, of course, always like to mention that homeland was never terms that we used pre-9/11. Homeland are straight-up Nazi terminology, which only makes sense since we brought all the paperclip Nazis over here anyway, as we sold our soul to the devil to get space crafts on the moon, and more and more. But I digress. federalgovernmentjobs.us has a job posting for administrative assistant at U.S. Northcom in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So as we're blasting out on BoulderFreeRadio.com, KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, perhaps they can hear us over in Colorado Springs. Perhaps they can hear us better than we'd like to think. So I'd just like to, you know, ask if you guys would maybe, you know, knock off treating the American public as if we're all enemies of the state, as if we're all homegrown terrorists, as if under every rock there's some boogeyman waiting to happen. As we've seen throughout history, anytime you set up something to look for this and we're going to eradicate that, you're going to find evidence of it, even if it's all trumped up. So it's the same in the war of terror. It's the same as the phony war on drugs and every other war we start. But of course can't finish, but that doesn't stop us from throwing lives and money at it. So, ultimately, I would say, who wants to work at Northcom? Not me, buddy. And you should quit. Moving down the list, U.S. and NATO poised for the most massive war in Afghanistan's history. And as I note on the side, the left is going to love it. This article is by Rick Rosoff, and it's up on globalresearch.ca. Over the past week, U.S. newspapers and television networks have been abuzz with reports that Washington and its NATO allies are planning an unprecedented increase of troops for the war in Afghanistan, even in addition to the 17,000 new American and several thousand NATO forces that have been committed to the war so far this year. The number, based on as-yet unsubstantiated reports of what U.S. and NATO Commander Stanley Killer McChrystal and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Michael Mullen, have demanded of the White House, range from 10,000 to 45,000. Fox News cited the figures as high as 45,000 more American soldiers. ABC News, as many as 40,000. On September 15th, Christian Science Monitor wrote of perhaps as many as 45,000. So again, these are tens of thousands of new troops that your Democratic president is going to send into the meat grinder of Afghanisurge because he calls it the right war. That's who really attacked us on 9/11. All buying into the same fraud and again, the blank check that 9/11 has given all of these guys. So I just mentioned 9/11, so let's mention Emmanuel Goldstein. He's been busy lately. Bin Laden demands Europe withdraw Afghanistan troops. This from Reuters out of Dubai. Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden demanded that European nations withdraw their troops from Afghanistan in a new audio tape aired last Friday, saying they were sacrificing men and money in an unjust U.S.-led war. So, I mean, even for a dead guy who seems to still put out recordings, although it seems like their Osama video-generating software isn't working very well. Their audio software is still working fine. They're still cranking out the fake audio recordings that most people say doesn't sound like him. It's a different dialect. He died in Tora Bora in December 2001. Anyway, for a dead guy, you still at least have to point out that, yes, we're sacrificing men and money in an unjust U.S.-led war. SAIC, one of our favorite private military contractor friends, their latest multi-million dollar award for the military-industrial complex is $29 million to support Naval Air Systems Command. And I get all those press releases straight from the horse's mouth, SAIC.com. Science Applications International. We're going to hit a flashback, and this was brought to my attention, as many great flashbacks are, from Alex Constantine. This is going back to April 28th, 2008, an article by Anne Wright. Is there a cover-up of rape and murder of women soldiers? The Department of Defense statistics are alarming. One in three women who join the U.S. military will be sexually assaulted or raped by men in the military. The warnings to women should begin above the doors of the military recruiting stations, as that is where assaults on women in the military begin before they're even recruited. Now, as I like to do a lot of times, is to reference Bill Hicks because it's always so pertinent. He was talking about gays being in the military. And he essentially said, anybody dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed. And, of course, you get all the complaints because I don't want some gay guy looking at me while I'm killing kids. My man Zach sent me an article from DangerousMinds.net, and that would be about Asgarda, the new tribe of Ukrainian women warriors fighting back against sexual trafficking and oppression. So that ends the War Whores posting. Again, bad semantic combinations excused. NORTHCOM, NATO, and the death of women soldiers. You can definitely make the argument that if women ran the world, even if they were a crazy warrior tribe, could it be any worse than what's going on right now? What's the old play where the women refuse sex until their stupid husbands stop killing each other? All right. Too many sidebars. Let's hurry up. Econo crash, secret deals, suicides, and Saturn shutdown. U.S. secretly tried to make a deal with Goldman Sachs during the engineered financial collapse of a year ago, now bringing us to the new financial world order. That's by way of raw story, and again, big surprise, making deals with Goldman Sachs. Gee, who did Obama bring into the Treasury? Oh, Goldman Sachs. Oh. 35 million Americans on food stamps, 12% of the United States, and that's the highest since records have been kept in 1969. That's from mybudget360.com. Smartphones blamed for rash of France telecom suicides. That's from switched.com. Hedge fund executives' escalator fall ruled accidental. That's from NBCPhiladelphia.com, and chalk that one up to the growing list of strangely deceased financial players. U.S. Census Bureau report, 40 million living in poverty. That's from the World Socialist website. The Penske deal failed, and General Motors is moving to close Saturn. That's from the New York Times. We've got more from the L.A. Times. GM to shut down Saturn after Penske walks away. Now GM and eBay end their joint online sales failed experiment. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. More great work from Alan Grayson. He has been grilling and drilling all the phony frontmen for the fraudulent Federal Reserve. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's to an empty chamber, but it doesn't matter. It goes on the record, such as this question. Does the Fed manipulate the stock market?
The Federal Reserve ever tried to manipulate the U.S. stock market?
No, sir. Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of, but you're the attorney, right?
That's right.
So you might not even know, right?
I would expect to know if there were something like that being done. I'm not aware of that at all.
And if you did know, you'd be bound by attorney-client privilege, and you wouldn't be able to tell us, right?
Sir, if there were something the Federal Reserve were doing outside its legal authority, I would have an obligation to say something about that.
All right, so we agree that any participation by the Federal Reserve in the stock market or the futures market is outside the Federal Reserve's legal authority, right?
The Federal Reserve has some authority to regulate various aspects of markets and participate in markets in certain ways. So I think your question is too categorical, but...
I think not, actually. Why don't you answer it?
I don't know. Your question is so overbroad. I don't know where to begin to answer that.
I don't think it's that overbroad. I'd like you to tell me whether it's within the Federal Reserve's legal authority to try to manipulate the stock market or the futures market.
So I don't believe the Federal Reserve tries to manipulate the stock market.
Tries? Come on.
No, so...
Do they?
The Federal Reserve's obligation and what it does in monetary policy is try to influence interest rates, and in that way to maximize employment and to stabilize prices.
Now, if in fact the Federal Reserve were trying to do that or doing it, isn't that something that we'd want to know?
And the extent that the Federal Reserve influences interest rates, it does make announcements of that decision immediately.
That's not what I said. I said manipulate the stock market or the futures market. Wouldn't we want to know? Yes or no?
Could you define what you mean by...
I think you know what I mean, Mr. Alvarez. Now, wouldn't it be very helpful to have a GAO audit on that subject?
Could you describe what you mean by no? Well, it depends on what your definition of the word is, and other such semantical games. Representative Alan Grayson doing his part to audit the Fed, H.R. 1207. Last couple updates on the Econo crash, secret deals, suicides, and Saturn shutdown. Rhode Island has borrowed $90 million from the U.S. for all of its jobless claims. That's from Wikinews. The FDIC, that's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, has disclosed that its deposit insurance fund is now negative. It's negative. Negative. It's in the red. It's negative. They don't have any more money. They're trying to close. Now we're almost into the triple digits of banks that have been closed this year. And if you'd like documented proof of their failure in PDF format, you can just click the link from FDIC.gov right there. The last amazing note on the Econo crash was surprising to me. Comcast is in talks to buy NBC. This by way of the BBC. Comcast, the biggest U.S. cable TV provider, is reported to be in talks to buy a majority stake in the TV and film company NBC Universal. NBC Universal owns NBC Television Network, Universal Pictures, cable networks such as Bravo and CNBC, as well as the Universal Studios theme park. It is 80% owned by GE and 20% owned by Francis Vivendi. Several news agencies have said that Comcast is discussing buying 51% of the business, leaving General Electric with 49%. That is amazing and bad. Very quickly, the last post. I think we're amazingly going to get over all the information here on episode 143 of MediaMonarchy.com. Murder and mayhem, anger, weather wars, and a crash. The first note from CNN. This doesn't exactly relate to the murder and mayhem, but this just relates to the general level of chaos. However, this also relates to Frank Luntz, a pollster and word warrior in his own way. I'm not sure if he's the same guy who's come up with phrases like, you know, the death tax, things like that. He does focus groups to figure out what garbage will sell with Middle America. CNN was talking to him for a part of their special Mad as Hell, and he essentially pointed out that Americans are angrier than ever, and you can feel it when you walk down the street. Far, far worse, however, and just a few notes of the chaos and destruction raging around the world. Just a regular entry and press release from the Federal Emergency Management Agency on the American Samoan earthquakes, tsunamis, and flooding. Aid, of course, flows as well to tsunami-hit Samoa's death toll as of my posting was at 120. That's from the Associated Press as of yesterday. We also have a strong Indonesian quake killing hundreds, trapping more. The update to there is the death toll as of, I believe, late last night, 777. We also have the Ketsana typhoon leaving more than 360 dead across Southeast Asia. Strangely enough, back here in good old Texas, Rick Perry's cousin, aged 74, died in a shootout with deputies. More on that story from Raw Story. And the last story here, fighters respond to intercept aircraft. That's from militaryavenue.com. Unresponsive pilot crashes in Indiana as F-16s trail. That's from CNN. And NORAD said the crashed aircraft was flying erratically.
Thank you, Suze. We have another big story to tell you about today. An aircraft taking off from a Grand Rapids airport only to crash in Indiana, miles away from its original destination. We're just confirming the name of that pilot. He is David Ide of ADA. He was killed in the crash outside of Muncie, Indiana. Ide, affiliated with Ide Development Company in the Lansing area, a company founded by his father. It's a commercial real estate firm, and that is the company that the plane was registered to. Just before noon, the Indiana State Police were notified of a plane flying erratically. Indiana National Guard scrambled two F-16 fighter jets to intercept that plane. It crashed minutes later. They believe perhaps the pilot was having some medical problems. We have team coverage tonight here from our area and also from our sister station in Indianapolis. We're going to begin with our assignment editor, Steve Kelso, who's been on the story since it broke and who has been tracking the plane's route up until the moment crash.
You know, we have some amazing new tools. We want to get to some of those here in just a second to show you what was going on. But I want to let you know, in this newsroom this afternoon, we became aware the two F-16s had scrambled because the towers were not able to make contact with his pilot.
Because that's what they're supposed to do when planes aren't responding. See, in this case, they responded very quickly and took care of the situation and made sure that it crashed in a small area. That's not what happened on the morning of 9/11. But again, we don't have time to get into any of that because it's the end. We glance back, and again, the Obama-siah has lost the Pimp Olympics for Chicago 2016. It's going to Reno. We've got the bizarre story of the CBS Letterman extortion plot that, again, anytime things involve extortion and sex scandals and the Columbia Broadcasting System with their all-seeing eye logo and their skull and bones connections, it's always kind of interesting. More on the massive job losses. And I can't say anymore. That's all I got. Let's run down the quick list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I run a stat counter. It lets me see who visits. Sometimes it's quite interesting. As I noted last week, the amount of strange military governmental agencies that have been visiting the site seem to be down. However, overall traffic to the site has gone up and up and up. We've gone in the last couple weeks from regularly hitting 500 or 600 to now hitting 800 or 900 a day. So please keep it up. Spread the word. Thank you. Back to the list. We had Lockheed Martin. They Googled Dr. Regina Dugan. I think she was one of the people tipped to be cyber czar. We've got the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission out of Gaithersburg, Maryland. We've got polk.army.mil, U.S. Army headquarters. We've got the Korea Institute for Defense Analyses out of Seoul. And finally, the Navy Network Information Center, this time out of Pensacola, Florida. So that's going to do it for this latest episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It was 143. It was October 2nd, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Hat tip to all you guys who helped me get the info out. Because again, only with good information can you make good decisions, my friends. And that's how we're going to leave it. As I remind you and implore you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.